In this episode, Bill and I pick our top three streaming services and shows. Then, sparked by Gregory Gauthier's latest PSA title, we talk through, is it fair or unfair for top-ranked caliber players to play in low-ranking tournaments? But not just in squash. Like normal, we dance around other sports and cultural realms and see how squash compares. And just a quick heads up, the last 7 minutes of the breakdown, we introduce a new segment called Fan Follow-Up. That's where we're going to read some of the comments that we've been getting online, and we appreciate that a lot. Feel free to email us at squashradio@gmail.com, and you may have your name and your comment read. So take a listen to Bill and myself trying to break it down.
What about this?
This call is being recorded.
And do you want me to kick it off, or do you want to kick off?
You are the man, Connor.
Oh, shit. That's on the record, man.
I know. I'm glad to see your hair's in the bun. The early FaceTime before this call was startling, to say the least.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get in. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. We've got another episode of The Breakdown. This is episode number what, Bill?
It is episode number 3, Connor.
I like it. We're going to use that theme in just a hot second. And today we're here to talk about what is fair or unfair. Why don't you give the quick breakdown, the high level 30-second.
We're going to talk about the PSA Tour. Not a lot going on in the PSA Tour right now, but there are a couple. There was just a satellite event taking place in Poland, and Gregory Gauthier won his 46th title, and being trumpeted on all the squash sites as the general wins his 46th title. And not that we want to become known as the anti-Greg Gauthier podcast, because we are certainly not that.
I think it sparked something interesting for sure. And so before we get in there, using this as episode 3, and we may use this at other episodes, so who knows, but we're going to take the opportunity. We're going to give our top 3 streaming products. And we're going to break it down in 2 different ways. One, ranking any of the streaming products out there. I'm talking, you name it, it's fair game. And then we're going to talk what our 3 favorite shows are on that. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Bill. What are your top 3 streaming products?
Netflix, by far, in a way, number one. Nothing even comes close. So it's it's Netflix, and then it's everything else. Second, Prime. Amazon Prime is number 2, and I'm going to pander here, and I'm going to say PSA Squash TV, number 3.
So I'll give my top 3, and then we'll go into it. So, or do you want to guess what mine are?
I would assume Netflix is one.
Netflix is in the top 3, for sure.
Hulu.
No.
Is it Prime? Is Prime one of them?
Prime is also in the top 3.
So basically you have 2 of the same top at 3 as me, and I'm sure that you do not have PSA TV.
I do not.
Third. No, I didn't think so. So, let me think what your third could be. You're always on
Give you a hint.
I'm ready.
I don't think that it's as obvious as others might think.
That's exactly what I was going to say, because I was going to say it was going to be one of your weird things that you do, that like you discovered it, like your buddy from Denison or from whatever prep school you went to, like invented it. And there's like 3 people watching it, but you think it's the coolest thing ever. And it's going to make millions of dollars down the road. And then in the end, either your friend ends up in jail or nobody's ever heard of it. how close am I in getting that? God. No.
Look, I think that is how much does that sound like me? I mean, that's north of 80%. I think that would be a very fair. Oh, I think that would be very fair in many cases. But I think that that's unfair in this case.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Because the product I'm thinking of that a lot of people know about, it's Gizmo. So pervasive.
Gizmo. It's called Gizmo. No. Okay. It's usually the name of your products that you'd introduce me to. Usually have a name like Gizmo or something like that.
I hear you. It's YouTube.
Well,
I'm just saying.
I know. Well, that's pretty mainstream for you.
Exactly. But here's why. And I was actually conflicted in terms of how would I rank these?
Okay.
And so I'm highly conflicted between YouTube. Prime is number 3. That's clear. That's bottom. And by, you know, a big proportion.
For sure.
So Netflix and YouTube battling it out. And I actually have to give the edge to YouTube. And also here's why. Squash is on
fair,
YouTube.
Fair enough. So do you pay for the YouTube subscription? Do you watch movies on YouTube?
No.
or just do like I watch YouTube, like where I click on it if I want to watch like a clip of something I've heard about in the news. I want to see them do it. I go right to YouTube.
YouTube's amazing to me because of the amount of things I can learn. So, and it's like you can do anything. Have I paid for it? Yeah, I've done their streaming service where, and not really for their original content that they do, but really to have the ad-free experience. Mm-hmm. And it's very conflicting because it's actually removing that as a friction I do enjoy. I just don't know. I'm paying for a lot of other services and can I live with the 5-second ads? The answer is yes.
Right.
But I learned how to cook. I learned how to use Excel. I learned how to do this podcast via YouTube.
Did you learn how to not to use the word learn?
No.
All right. I like the way you're, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, are you making fun of the way I'm saying it?
100% making the way you
say it. You know, I would say that's fair, but unfair.
Okay.
So
go ahead.
But,
I've learned my lesson. Thank you.
So I would say there's just so many different things you can learn on YouTube and mm-hmm. I enjoy that, which is why I'm going to give the edge number one to YouTube. But number two is Netflix.
Mm-hmm. And then we have Prime.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So what are the shows you like on Netflix? What are your top three?
So during the lockdown, or you know, the ongoing COVID pandemic, stuck at my home gym, no squash available to me. So no exercise available to me. And as you well know, exercise fanatic that I am. And eating like a teenager, basically, and drinking like a teenager, I need to exercise. So I bought a bike, not a Peloton. So I don't have the built-in video. So I have to watch my own videos. So I have been watching, basically, and I know top three is a little limited to me. So I'm going to break the rules here and just say that sorry about that. I see the face you're making. I know. Sorry about that. So I have to say it because I rewatched every season of The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
I rewatched every season of The Sopranos and I rewatched every season except season 7 of West Wing. So I watched The Wire on I had a free HBO Max trial. So I did watch that just for a trial. Sopranos I watched also during that trial. So I did watch those three, and Netflix had West Wing on until Christmas Eve, which is a funny story to me anyways, because I had watched the top first 5 seasons of West Wing, like for real. I had watched them when they were on NBC. So there's 22 episodes, which is ridiculously long when you think about it now, because most series are like 10. So 22 episodes is ridiculously long and they're almost an hour long. So like 47 minutes non-commercial. So I watched the first 5 seasons and then I see a little thing pop up on Netflix. It says, this will be leaving Netflix on December 24th, which is Christmas Eve. And it was going over to, I believe, Peacock because it's an NBC show and I'm not paying for Peacock. So I had a watch on Christmas Eve. I watched 17 episodes of The West Wing on Christmas Eve just to get to the end of season 6. And I still haven't seen season 7. So although I know Matt Santos is the president in season 7, or becomes president, I have not watched it. So no spoilers for me.
Wait, so you're saying that you never finished?
I only got to season 6. I did 17 episodes to freaking finish season 6. And believe me, my wife is like, I mean, not that we were going anywhere for Christmas Eve, but it is Christmas Eve, right? And I'm sitting there with my phone while my wife is cooking dinner and telling her, yeah, only one more episode left. So,
dinner's ready.
Yeah, exactly. So, but as far as the newer shows, The Crown, I would say was by far my favorite Netflix Prime show that I watched. The Crown and Marvelous Miss Maisel were my two favorites by far.
Well, Marvelous was on Prime.
Yeah, right. So those are my two. I believe The Crown was on Prime.
Oh, also. I mean, you could do top three in each one.
Yeah. No, okay. I don't want to. I already broke your rules, and I know how you
do. Yeah, if you're already breaking it, I'm not going to let you go there. And so, the whole point was to watch you wrestle with the challenge of this, Bill.
Yeah, and wrestling I did. So The Crown, I would say overall, The Crown number one, far and away, was the best thing I streamed during the last winter. And the news, I just finished the last season, which was season 4. Season 1 and 2, phenomenal. Season 3, we stopped watching because I couldn't take the new queen to start. Like it was just mm-hmm. transitioning to the new queen was too rough for me.
Yeah.
So I had to stop watching it for a bit, but I jumped back in. It was just phenomenal. The acting, Helen Bonham Carter and Gillian Anderson, all the people who are in that, did the acting in that was so great. And just, you know, plus it's somewhat historically true. So you got to like watch an episode, then Google, like, did this really happen?
And yeah, totally.
So it was fun doing that. How about yourself?
So in trying to respect the way that I set up this mm-hmm. question, this is what I'll try and do. Now, actually on YouTube, there's just so many. Mm-hmm. I can't even do it. So let me try and force the question on Netflix, which I definitely watch a ton of them. In terms of commenting on The West Wing, it is really good. I've actually watched it about 3 or 4 times. And did you know there's actually a podcast about West Wing? Like I the fans of.
I did not know.
Yeah, you may want to check that out. My cousins love it. It's one. It's an enhancer.
Do they go like season by season and like talk about episode each episode?
Yeah, you got it. Yeah,
I just listened to a Wire one that did that on the Ringer Podcast Network, and they did The Wire season by season, and it was frankly it was awful. So it was a tough listen. They weren't as in. You could tell they didn't watch it. It was more like they were looking for a gig, so they didn't watch
that. Oh, interesting.
Nearly as closely as I did, and I was tempted to do something I never do, is tweet at someone and say, hey, you know what? If you're going to do this, like, you know, listen to the, watch the episode and like get your, at least pronounce the names right.
Yeah. So I'll do the obvious one. I think Queen's Gambit was just, it was one of the shows that I consume so fast. It was something that was captivating.
Well, with 7 episodes, it's not hard to consume it fast. Just FYI,
I'm just saying. I did. So Queen's Gambit's on there.
At the end of this, could I let you go? And I apologize for interrupting. Can I come back to what you're saying and like say,
absolutely
say why the ones you're watching are horrible?
I mean, this is trying to be a conversation where we can respect each other's, you know, who has the floor and who has the mic in this case. But you know, I understand it rules.
I yield the floor to the gentleman from Stonington.
Thank you. So the other one is, I'm going to toss out a non-obvious one, but one that I'm a huge fan of, which was called Halt and Catch Fire. So this was an AMC program, which I think they do a fantastic job. And it's basically, have you seen this?
I have not.
No. So it's about Silicon Valley back in like the 80s and the 70s. So around like really when the original Apple was getting off and that kind of stuff. So, but they fast forward through time. So it goes from like 70s to the 80s and I think early 90s. So like, takes you through this like the story arc of technology of
drama, like, drama or a documentary?
Drama. Yeah. Think of like if you liked Mad Men, which was a timepiece.
Yeah, yeah.
In the 1960s, this is a timepiece that covers the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Oh, it sounds interesting.
Yeah. So the reason I was throwing it out there, because I think there's a lot of obvious ones, and I was trying to say that.
Yeah, no. Thank you. Thank you for that rec. I don't have YouTube. Maybe you could give me your YouTube password and I'll watch it.
No, this is on. This is on Netflix.
Oh, is it? Halt and Catch Fire? Oh, okay. I apologize. I thought you said YouTube. Again, my listening skills not solid.
No. So, gosh, the other one, I am going to say, how many did I list?
You listed 2.
2. Okay. So this third one is, I'm going to break the rules slightly, but I'm going to say all the food stuff on Netflix.
Yeah.
So I'm talking Chef's Table. I'm talking, there was an incredible competition food one, which I'm blanking on the name, but it was one with Dax Shepard, and they were doing it in teams. It's a 10-part series. It just was so awesome. So
yeah. Netflix does an awesome job with the food stuff for sure. I'm trying to think of the David Chang ones. He did one, and it was like he did one, and it was incredible. Gosh, I'm blanking on it. I'm gonna look it up on my phone right now and see what it's called, because it was incredible. And then they try to do like a better version of it. You know how like when there's a show and it's like kind of down and dirty and it's really good, and then they're like, wow, our show's successful, let's make it prettier and more commercial and more socially acceptable, and then it sucked. Ugly Delicious.
Oh yeah,
Ugly Delicious was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. The Seth Rogen episode, I believe, of Ugly Delicious
was good.
Incredible. You got to watch it. Yeah, absolutely.
So what they do is such a cross-pollination of like original content plus like great shows, and they really have created this food explosion. And you know, the Chef's Table, I've got to point towards like the way to tell the story behind art and really show the experience plus the art, like the visual aspects of that show are just so well done. Well, I'll round this out quickly with the ones on Prime, and I'm actually going to give 2. So we're both breaking the rules here. The Boys, which was... Do you know this one?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. So just really interesting. It's about the superheroes, but it also shows like, you know, there is sort of like a level of humanity with superpowers. And
for sure. Yeah. Very good. Very good show.
Wow, I can't believe we agree.
Yes.
Then the other one is actually they do a good job of bringing over English shows, and it was so just meaning that we can access it, and it's Line of Duty.
Not familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Not familiar. So speaking of those, well, what's Line of Duty about? Quickly to see if I'll be interested in it. Is it a World War II thing?
No, it's basically a cop show. Oh, so okay. It's about detectives.
Drama also? Not mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So
and it's the one other thing, it's about an internal investigation unit, and so they go after corrupt cops, and so it's just really interesting web that is shown, and they do a great job of season to season it being great, but also with an overarching arc.
And the same question I always ask when people tell me recommend me a show, the first thing I ask is how many seasons. So like, are we talking like if I started watching it now, I have to watch 8 seasons, or is it just like 2 or 3?
No, it's up to 5, maybe 6. Okay. Season 5.
How many
episodes? Season 5. Each episode it's like between 4 to 6, but each one's an hour and a half.
Oh, good. 4 to 6 is like the sweet spot. That's, you know what? Peaky Blinders was perfect. 7 episode season or 6 episode season. They're an hour long. It's somewhere a little bit over an hour. And although you couldn't understand half of them and you kind of had to rewatch them. Are you a Peaky Blinders guy?
You know, our good friend Peter Vittable just recommended to me, and that's why I just started watching it again. So
you'll find that after you watch it, flash forward like a month after you watch it, and if any, like you're watching TV and somebody comes over your house or somebody accesses your television, they'll ask you why you have closed caption on. And the reason that half of America has closed caption on is because of Peaky Blinders, and they forgot to turn it off afterwards. Because it's ridiculously hard to understand, but awesome show. Just a great show.
Okay, it's not hard for me. Now, granted, I did grow up in Europe, both in Belgium and in England, so I'm used to hearing different accents. But
fair enough. So before we jump off this topic, I just have to go back quickly because I didn't want to be rude. Queen's Gambit was the most overrated series I've ever watched. It was built up. Granted, it was built up. Everybody told me how great it was, and I was like really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And there's a crossover. The star of Queen's Gambit is also in Peaky Blinders, which intrigued me also because she was a big character at the last two seasons of Peaky Blinders. But I thought Queen's Gambit was just so superficial and just didn't get in depth about the mother. The mother was the only redeeming factor of that whole movie, that whole show, I thought, anyways. And the squash scene.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, so I found it pretty early, and I actually thought that wrong I was. I was like, oh, this would be obscure that no one watches. Uh-huh. And so I just found it. And I had no expectations going in. So it was all just, I was very curious about this character, mm-hmm. and it brought it through. I actually didn't like their middle parts, like 3/4 of the way in. I sort of got like, I was like, what's, this isn't.
Yeah.
I think it lost a little bit of its luster to me. And then it finished out interestingly, but the start was captivating to me. But if someone had given me such high recommendations and it's number one show, I don't know. You get colored with like that impression, right?
So, what do you think of the squash scene?
I mean, I think anytime that I see squash on TV, I'm just really happy. And because now I know to like, oh my God, it's more like how terrible is this going to be how I approach it.
Right. Wasn't bad. I think the last one I saw on any kind of like Showtime was the Billions, the Showtime Billion show has Chuck play squash every once in a while. And it's so bad. They don't show a lot of it, but like just what they show is so awful.
You know what? We don't normally disclose a lot of the topics we're going to do.
Uh-huh.
I think we need to do like a rank order of the squash, where squash has been listed in mainstream media and rank it.
Right. And I know you don't want to talk about this topic because we kind of discussed it off air, is the intersection between chess and squash. One of the biggest pet peeves that I have.
Oh, you mean the announce?
Yeah.
No. Okay. Because there's a lot of overlap, which within chess and squash. So.
Yeah. Well, So do you not want to talk about this is what we're saying? My.
You have a very minute thing with a tagline that you're frustrated by.
Everything I'm upset about. is minute.
I just have a way more levels of connection and that kind of stuff. But go ahead.
I think the tagline that people, and I don't know if they use it in other countries, but they definitely use it in the United States, is that they call squash physical as a marketing tool. They call it, you ask somebody, ask you like, well, so what's squash? You know, think of physical chess, somebody says, which to me is one of the dumbest marketing lines you could ever use. One of the dumbest ways you could ever describe a sport. You're basically describing a niche sport with another by describing another niche sport. So well, nobody knows what squash is. Nobody knows what how to play chess. It's always bugged me. So that's it. I needed to get off my chest. Thank you.
That's pretty funny. So, I mean, the fact that you think no one knows what chess is, I think,
well, means that you don't understand. They know what it is. They just don't know how to play.
That doesn't matter, right? So the two ways where my brain went immediately was at the root. We were first using the for ranking. We were using the chess EOL algorithm, which we've since improved. So I thought that was where you're going. The other part was when describing the comparison of racquetball to squash, we say it's the difference between checkers and chess. So anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? I think, yes. When we have our marketing of squash podcast, I will rip apart the chess at 100 miles an hour crowd. But let's okay.
So wait, is it the speed? Like, would you prefer chess at 200 miles per hour?
How about checkers at 50 miles an hour? Maybe that would be more appealing to like the masses when you're explaining what squash is. I don't know. Maybe honestly, I think it should be is poker. They should compare it to poker because everybody knows how to play poker. Not everybody knows how to play chess. But either way, again, we'll save that for another episode.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, I think that was good. We gave ourselves a timer. I think we came in just around that timer. So if you hear exhaustion in our voices, because we're trying to cover some of that fast to get on to the other section.
Squash. Let's talk squash.
The squash. The breakdown. The breakdown of squash. So as Bill said, we're going to be the spark for us in this conversation was the fact that Gregory Gauthier just played in a squash tournament where he was the best player by far. And the way that we were going to talk about this was, is that fair or unfair?
Yeah.
I'm going to let you kick it off, Bill.
Yeah. And again, PSA is not all knowing how the PSA ranking system works is not, I don't know how it works. I tried to look it up today and I still don't really understand it, but I'm assuming he's playing because he needs to play for ranking points because he's played in three of these events since September, has not lost a game. Three PSA 10 events, like, you know, the 10 level 10 events or 10K events, whatever they call them, which in fact, as I read this morning on the Poland event, the actual prize money was $3,000. So he won like $600 in playing in this event. But in the end, he's playing in these tournaments. He's winning 3-0. He's spending on average less than 100 minutes on court for the whole tournament and just blowing these players away. Where the, you know, in the first round, he's playing a player who's ranked 385th. And in the second seeded players typically ranked 60th or 70th or 50th. So whether it's fair or unfair, I don't know. I'd have to.
Well, what's your call?
Unfair to the other players, I'm guessing. I mean, it's somebody who's the second seed, who's maybe a player who's ranked like 60th, who like, hey, I'm playing in these tournaments and I have a chance to win. And Gregory Gauthier steps on the court, whether he's Gregory Gauthier from 10 years ago or not, he's still ranked in the top 40. He's still Gregory Gauthier. He still gets to play in the black ball events and the Egyptian Open and the Manchester event. He's played in every event since squash came back after the first wave of the pandemic. He's played in every tournament and these kids don't get to play in those tournaments. So to me it's unfair, but again, not knowing what his situation is and whether he's playing because he won't be able to get into those bigger tournaments down the road when they open up. I guess I would have to be a little more learned on that subject, but to me, it strikes me. And I guess me being someone who doesn't know the squash ranking system, just like I'm guessing 99% of the squash public doesn't know it, strikes me as unfair.
I'm going fair.
Okay.
As the top line. And you know, this is where I want to bring it back around, because on the last quick plug for our last, the breakdown number two, sportsmanship versus showmanship, through our discussion, I actually kind of found myself thinking at this at a different level. So I'm starting off with fair. I'm curious where I'll end. So I think it's fair because, and I will preface it as well, there's a ton of rules, regulations, ranking points. We have to also put a huge pin in this that there's COVID environment, which means this isn't operating the same. So there are a slew of reasons that I don't know. So I'm extracting that here we have the, such a mismatch of caliber and whether that's fair or not fair. So I just want to give that preface.
Sure.
And so I think it's fair. There's an element that the fans, they get access to someone that is disproportionately better. Mm-hmm. Great. Maybe it's not the best quality squash match, but at least you get access to see him. Fair in terms of like, hey, I'm ranked 177 in the world. When's the time that I get a chance to step on court and compete against Gregory Gauthier? So there's that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, of course he's going to win. And so, but maybe not. What if I get the chance to beat him? By him stepping into that arena, it's like, it is fair for him to do that. There's no, I don't know the rules, but if that's the rules, now we don't know why he's doing it. That's where I go fair. And I will throw this out a little bit because, Bill, you are very versed in other sports. And but let me give another or
just not squash, right? Is that what you're saying?
I think you're versed in the squash. No, not at all.
Okay.
We don't always disagree, that we just happen to have a lot of different perspectives. So let me give the example. Yep. And this is actually an area that both you and I love. Mm-hmm. Is it fair that Jerry Seinfeld, who can sell out arenas, will go into the comedy club and take a spot from an up-and-coming comedian?
No. Unfair.
You think that him doing that's unfair?
Fair to the audience, for sure. And just like it kind of corresponds with what you're saying. Cool for the audience, like to see Gregory Gauthier. And it's an actual real-life experience. So I'll just jump in here and tell you a real-life story that happened, I think it was like 2 years ago. Work outing. We went to amateur night at a comedy club in the city. A whole office went, paid $9. Gotham City, I believe it was called. It was.
Yeah, that's pro ball.
Yeah, pro ball for sure. But it was amateur night, open mic, not open mic night.
Oh, I apologize.
It wasn't where they had a set lineup. It was all unknowns. It was like their night. It was like Monday or Tuesday. It was like $8 to get in or something ridiculously low. Sat right up in front.
Did you take the stage?
No.
Okay, I just wanted
definitely not. But although there was, strangely enough, there was a former junior squash player who was making her debut. And so there were a bunch of ex-junior squash players sitting behind us, which was pretty funny. But so we're there, and out of nowhere, the MC comes on and says, well, you know, special guest tonight. And who walks on for $8? Jerry Seinfeld.
No way.
Jerry Seinfeld. Yes.
Can you confirm that we didn't talk about that before the show?
100% never didn't talk. Do you not know this story?
I don't think so.
Okay. So yeah. So Jerry Seinfeld comes up and we're sitting there. Whoa. Holy crap. And I'm getting like, cause I set all this up. So I'm getting all slaps on the back from like our boss and from all my employees. Hey, good job. And I was like, yeah. So he comes up and just honestly, and the difference between him and the other comedians, some of the other comedians were good, was ridiculous. He was great. He did 15 minutes of just like laughing out loud only as he can do. No cursing, no working blue, as they say, dirty jokes or anything like that. Just funny. And what he's there for, he had a notes in, and he even said, I have notes and I'm working on material for, he was doing his Carnegie Hall, Beacon Theater shows that he does. He does the Beacon Theater like residencies. So he was working on new material. So walks off the stage, people go crazy. The rest of the comedians come on, you know, less two or three comedians come on. After the show, because they were doing another same thing, like a night set at like 9 o'clock, and we were in the early show. We go to the bar next door to have some beers before we go out to dinner. All the comedians, like the amateur comedians, were there having beers also because they're going on and they're just hanging out somewhere to go and hang out. And we talked to them and they hated it. They said, he's like, wow, you hit number one. I talked to the guy who followed him, said, how do I follow that? The guy who got bumped because of him, ridiculous. They said, happens all the time. These guys come down and do this. This is one night. He says he could do this any night he wants. And this is our night. And he comes down here and bumps me. And now I got to follow him. And the other guy has to follow him. And we're not as funny. They hated it. Absolutely hated it. So wondering if the squash players were playing in the, you know, the Polish tournament and the Czech tournament. And I forget where the other tournament was in September. Thought the same thing about Gauthier stepping on court. Because these guys were in it unequivocally, not like, wow, he's our idol. He's Jerry Seinfeld. It was so cool to be on the same stage as him. They're like, he's killing us.
Yeah, I think it kind of depends on, so this helps me align where your line of thinking is, but I think within those comedians and or the squash players in this analogy, or sorry, in these stories, not even analogies, is that if I were that close and I saw Jerry, how he worked, I would treat that as an opportunity. If I'm on court with Gregory Gutz here, I don't expect to win, but I got nothing to lose, and I want to see how he does it in this environment. So it all depends on, like, yeah, by comparison, you're going to be terrible because you're seeing the best in the biz. And I guess the question is, how do you naturally react to that?
Right. And I guess another question is, right, and that's person by person, right? And you'd have to ask the players whether they think that the other question I have is, did he take another player's place? That's the other question.
Yeah. And that's always the answer is yes or maybe. And it's still, look, that means that you're one spot away and you got to fight harder.
No, I know. And in these times and with these tournaments, these cross-border tournaments, they're calling them, or in these different tournaments, a lot of times it's not easy to fill the spots. So they're using local players just to fill wildcard spots and things such as that also. So it could be that they couldn't, like, he needs to be there. He could be there anyways. And there's nobody else to play. Otherwise, like, the top club player was going to play in the first round. So you don't know that. So good. All questions that we don't know the answers to.
I do want to give one other sort of example of this, but I'm going to ask you for it. But quickly, because I just listened to a podcast with Jerry Seinfeld.
I was wondering why you came up with that. That's funny.
Yeah, he was top of mind. I just listened to a podcast of him on the Tim Ferriss show.
Yeah, sure.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Like, it is. I don't know if I would have clicked a podcast with Jerry Seinfeld, but because he was on this show, and I know the way that this interviewer asks questions and extracts information, it was brilliant. And so Jerry's talking about, you got to do the reps. He needs that practice. Like, there's no way.
Sure.
You know what he thinks of himself as his profession?
No.
A writer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So he's a writer first, and then he has to perform what he wrote. And he's like, it's in my head, but I need an audience to react. And he's like, one of the great questions that was asked was, do you ask other comedians? Do you ask other, like, people what they thought of it? He's like, no. I give the bit and the crowd tells me if they don't get it, and he's like, I'm filled with data when I come off that thing. And then
interesting, because he just wrote a book called Is This Something? And the whole premise of his book was him talking with other comedians about certain subjects and asked, like, thinking, querying whether they were funny or if they're a bit or not. Like, so they come up with an idea and you say, I guess it's a big comedian saying is this something? Meaning, is this something we could work on? Mm-hmm. So yeah, funny that he would say that on the podcast and then write a whole book that basically contradicts it.
Well, no, not necessarily. The thing is, those are peers and that kind of stuff, but he's still basically, he's not doing it for other comedians, right? Sure. He's doing it for the crowds.
Sure.
So what it is like, you're incubating and he's like, is this something? Yeah. So he talks a little bit about that, but still what he's performing for is the stage.
The night he did the Gotham when we were there, he prefaced this bit he was going to do on raisins, and he did this like 3-minute thing on raisins and said, you know, I don't know if this is going to work or not, and da 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 da, and he did it, and it was very funny, obviously, and we laughed about it, of course. And then one of our colleagues like 3 months later sent me a text that he got from one of his buddies who had just seen Seinfeld live and paid like $150 to see him at the Pekin, and said, and the text said, he did this great bit on raisins.
That's hilarious.
I said, well, we saw it for $8, so we win in the end. So it's an interesting topic with Gaultier. So any other?
Well, what I was going to ask you is, and this is where you're much more versed, so I'd like for you to give the context of, like, look, in baseball, players go up and down. In golf, if you're injured, you're coming back on the tour, you have to try and get up there. You know, in tennis, you're working your way up the ranks. So, like, pick another one. There's often times that there's the caliber mismatch, which is an odd thing to have it happen. However, there's other reasons why that area may benefit.
Saying when Derek Jeter gets injured and he gets sent down and plays AAA. Or A-Rod, and the fans get to see them.
Yeah. Like, that's, is that fair or unfair?
Well, I think the difference with that I think it's fair because in those sports, well, if we're talking about baseball specifically, those sports, the minor leagues are there for the major league team. That's what they're there for. Their preparation for to play in the major league. So although you may be bumping a player out of his position, the whole point of the minor leagues is to matriculate into for your major league team. So it's a, you know, it's an incubator. So that is totally fair. So you're going down there to get your reps, to get your swing back, to get this back. And it's a home run, no pun intended, for the fans, because they get to see A-Rod, Jeter, or any of these other big stars come and play in a small environment.
Okay.
So that's fair. And they're also, it's not their choice. They're being sent down, but they're under contract. So there's a difference. I mean, Gaultier is playing these tournaments by his choice. He's not under contract.
Okay. So let's give it a quick comparison of golf. Cause look, just because the sport is where it is now, doesn't mean we can't change it. And right. I actually have been in favor of trying to create a PSA card approach, mm-hmm. right? Instead of this is anyone on the planet can sign up for the PSA, men's or women's, and join.
Right.
I don't know if that is a good quality control. And so if you go where there's an aspect of like, and you can give more of the context for the PGA, like should people earn their PSA card or PGA card?
Yeah. It's a good question. And with the no qualifying now, PSA went away from qualifying how many years ago? Like the qualifying rounds?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't tracked this as closely. Again, I'm removed from operating and the rules within there. So it's within the past 3 years.
All right. And golf has that still. You could still qualify for PGA tournaments. They have Monday and Tuesday qualifying. Now, what gets you into those qualifying tournaments that I don't know, but I do know that people have still go and qualify. A lot of them are ex-PGA players who have lost their playing privileges. They'll go have to play a Monday round and be true to finish in a certain spot to play the tournament. So, So it's tough. It's a difficult question. And again, there's so much mystery around the rankings with PSA and what they need to do. So maybe Greg needs to play these tournaments just so he can in the future play other tournaments. It just viscerally looking at it blankly when I click on this morning and it says congratulations to the French general on his 43rd title. I'm like, wow. I mean. Do you really want to congratulate him for spending 90 minutes on court and winning 3-0, 3-0, 3-0 against the 167th player, the 134 ranked player, the 120 ranked player, and the 286th ranked player or something, whatever they are? I think for Poland, it was 335, 134, 121, and 63. So, I mean, shouldn't be a banner headline is what I guess more rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, and I think... Look, these are an odd time, so let's give passes for that.
Sure.
But within squash, you know, I think that there's opportunity for improving. It sounds like, because I have an understanding of the rankings, but there are complexities of like, how can we communicate it? What are the different tour levels? I'm in favor of quality control, yet giving access and ability for players to move up, because there's also a challenge that once you get to a certain ranking, you're protected.
Yeah.
And so there are certain nuances there that I only know and have tried to address, whether it's in junior squash rankings or team USA team trials in that kind of regard. And so I know that there are people working on this and that we just don't know those nuances. But, I think that quality control and potentially heading towards a PSA card is something I, from the outside right now, would be in favor of.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, overall, the PSA is in a tough position right now. I mean, where are we? What is it? June 8th today? I mean, next week, the TOC.
January 8th.
January. What did I say?
June.
June 8th. Yeah, I wish. January 8th. The TOC was supposed to start next week, right? Like the 16th.
Yeah.
I mean, the marquee, I know it's some bias on our part living where we live, but the marquee event of the PSA Tour at Grand Central Station, and it's not going to happen. There's nothing on the PSA calendar until May, but that no TOC, that's a blow.
Yeah. I think, Bill, I know we don't like to do this a lot, but I think this is a good way to kind of close it out and tip our hat that we're going to do a piece on the TOC.
Oh yeah. I look forward to it.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling our audience at the same time you're telling me. I appreciate that.
That's not true. We've talked about this. It's in writing. I can show you the email. It's in our notes.
Okay.
But let's bring it back to Gaultier playing in a tournament that he is disproportionately the higher caliber, fair or unfair?
Unfair.
Okay. I'm going still with fair.
All right. All right, I appreciate that. Hey, Connor, I appreciate your opinion. These are good discussions to have. And I think that we're probably not the only ones because, I mean, again, I read the message boards and things like that and the Facebook groups and all, and people ask these questions and nobody really has the answer. So it's basically just a bunch of us speculating, and that's what we're doing here is speculating.
We're going to close this out, but here's what we're going to tell the audience because Bill and I are very mindful of, I think it's good to do a good quality show and also help the audience know what they're getting themselves into. And so we're going to be starting another segment of this show, which is called The Fan Follow-Up. If you want to tune out here, you've been caught up on the official breakdown. But if you want, stay tuned after this message and listen to The Fan Follow-Up. Hey, quick timeout and let's talk sports. How about Baya Sports? If you check out their website, you will quickly notice a few things. The attention to detail comes through loud and clear. But this is an example of a truly exceptional product. Think iPhone, and maybe you're an Android fan or Samsung person. I get it. But there has to be a lot of respect given to the iPhone and what it did to propel forward both design and function. It's sleek and easy to use and looks great. Well, in many ways, that's the Baya Force X. One thing that might be confusing to you is how can a great shoe be so affordable? Well, Baya Sports is embracing the latest trends, being a 21st century company, and is a direct-to-consumer brand, meaning they're cutting out the middleman and passing on the savings to you, the customer. This shoe could easily be $180 or $200, even more. But instead, you get this great-looking and performing shoe at around the $70 or $115 price point, which is not only a deal, it's almost a steal. I personally use these shoes, and I like them just as much on court as I do using it as a casual shoe, meaning I actually have two pairs. You really got to check them out. You can find the links on squashradio.com. And unlike other shoes where you have to break them in, these shoes, they are performance ready, straight out of the box. Baya Force X. Take it for a test drive from Baya Sports. Like you should buy a pair. Check it out. We hope you enjoy the show.
We're doing the fan follow-up now.
No, we talked about this. So just work with me, and it's okay if it's pause. And if you're like, bro, I want to get more prepared, we'll do that.
Bro.
All right.
Bro.
All right. So we'll go silent and I'll bring you in. Bill, I think this is going to be, or it sounds like, as much a surprise to you and our listeners. But now we're going to turn to the segment of fan follow-up. So the last episode we did had two parts to it. We talked about burgers as well as sportsmanship versus
showmanship.
Thank you. I wanted you to fill that. So burgers. Yeah. Have you changed your mind at all?
I haven't, but what I did find was, no, of course not, Connor, you know me. I don't change my mind on things like that. But I did find, though, is so we talked about burgers for 10, 15 minutes on the podcast, and then we talked about sportsmanship and showmanship. And I got 10 times, 15 times more feedback on the burgers than I got on the actual about Mustafa Asal and whether he was good or bad for squash. Got feedback that I missed this burger, and people are passionate about their burgers. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I was tweeted and texted and Facebook messaged the best burgers from around the country by anybody who listened to the podcast. And why didn't I mention them?
Well, let's go through them. I think this is an opportunity. And Bill, this is not an endorsement. This is not you agreeing, okay, Bill? This is just you stating facts, and you can curate which facts you want to share because that's your MO anyway. But I, you know, what I forgot to say was actually my favorite. And I do agree with two would be, what's the one in, there's one in Philly and there's one in New York. So JG Mellon on the Upper East Side. And then I do like Whiskey River. Am I saying that right?
No. So JG Mellon is probably the most overrated burger in the country. So I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like $17 for a burger the size of a nickel. So horrible take on your part, but that's okay. And the other place is called Village Whiskey.
Village Whiskey.
In Philadelphia. And that's the one that I got hammered on the most. Cause
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Because we spend a lot of time in Philly. And I go to Village Whiskey a lot. And if you had asked me this question 7 years ago, I would have said Village Whiskey is one of the best burgers I've ever had. Last three times I went, it was god awful.
Well, just because it attains, just like squash rankings, right? Just because you reach world number one, you got to stay up there, right?
You got to stay up there, and especially you got to stay up there if you're charging $20 for your burger.
Yeah. So look, I agree. And so the last time I was at JG Mellon's, they deliver on average. So for me,
average is so perfect for that. That's a great way to describe JG Mellon as average. So yes, I agree. For Connor, I agree.
I appreciate you taking my words out of context. Now, so what were some of the other fan follow-ups? Again, you can present the facts.
I'd present the facts. Burger Place, I'm going to look it up really quickly here. Another place that got rave reviews was the Burger Place. Well, first of all, a bunch of people in New Haven, where I lived in New Haven for a bunch of years, were cursing me for my take on that Louis Burgers, which are the first burger in the United States, which are exceedingly average burgers. Cool place, cool story, cool history, but the burgers themselves are ridiculously very, very average. I got crushed for that, like absolutely crushed. Considering I've also done like a bunch of YouTube videos and a bunch of TV shows extolling the virtues, which just shows fake news.
Can we not trust what you say?
You cannot trust what I say because I was under contract to say that they were good.
I mean, Bill, Buck, it's taken 3 episodes and we're already, the listeners now know to question your credibility.
100% question my credibility on that, because at one point during a morning drive TV show at 6 in the morning when I was eating a burger, I looked at the camera and said, best burger ever. And
yeah, that's unfortunate, right? Like, if you could go back in time, is that something you would erase from digital history?
100%. Out of the cloud. Out of the cloud.
Is that something you often think about?
All the time. All the time. Okay. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I should be banned from Burger Heaven if there's such a thing. So speaking of Burger Heaven, that was another, was Educated Burger in New Haven, people, which makes JG Mellon look like Morton Steakhouse.
No way.
I'm telling you. People are like, how did you not mention Educated Burger? You lived in New Haven for 18 years. So
that's
100%. So the other one was a burger in Greenwich, Connecticut that one of my former coworkers, said was the best burger in the United States, he called it. And he was also an Educated Burger person. He said a place called Sundown in Greenwich, and he also said the Corner Bistro in New York. He was appalled that I didn't mention either one of those. Which Corner Bistro, again, just like the other burger I mentioned, Village Whiskey, 10 years ago, it would have been number one also. Just like quality has gone so downhill from what it used to be. So just not the same place. So, I mean, those are people who went to those burger places once and like were wowed by it and never went back.
You know, there was an element I was asking you is, you know, because it's really tough to do high quality food every time, right? So that's why I give such respect to places that turn out quality each time.
Yeah.
And so even you can have a one-off. And so I think it's fair to say, you know, what I've noticed is that once a burger joint or any place starts doing 3 bad dishes, I was like, hey, this isn't a one-off. It's a trend. I'm out.
And that was Village Whiskey. And again, Village Whiskey is a cool little place. And there, I'll give Village Whiskey this. And this is what I did to assuage the feelings of my Philadelphia fans down, or no longer fans, I guess.
Brethren,
exactly. The city of brotherly love. It's the only place where I go get a burger where I actually eat the French fries, because their French fries are really good. They fire them. They do them in duck fat and they're crispy and they're really, really tasty. So I do eat their fries there. But as I say, when people like always try to tell me like go to Five Guys for a burger, and I always say, why would I go then? They go, well, they have really good fries. I'm like, well, you know, I'm not going to go there. So
what? There is another place, and this was, we're fortunate that we get to go to Philadelphia, because I do think it's actually a great food town. For me, Philadelphia and Chicago are two of the best food towns. Based on New York, I think you can get the most amount of experiences, but it's, you have to pay a lot of dollars for it. So what I like about Philly and Chicago is that the quality to how much things cost and the diversity is what I think makes it a really good food culture. So we've had the opportunity to be in both those cities, but I'm talking about Philadelphia. You took me to a different burger joint around the US Open. What was the name of that?
Local 44?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, good, great spot. Burger's good. Good burger. I would give it a good burger.
So is that solid neighborhood or destination?
Definitely neighborhood. And the reason I go there so often is I do love that place. It's my favorite bar when I'm down in Philadelphia for any extended period of time, because it's far enough away from where the event is hosted where others won't follow me and I could be there alone after being with people all day. So you know how I am about that. But I like to get away and not be in a place where I have a bunch of people walk in who I know and have to talk to. So Local 44 is just far enough away where nobody would go there unless I told them about it. So
look, even in this show, it's tough sharing the spotlight. I don't think it's sharing the spotlight at all, because it's all on you. With that note, we're going to close out the fan follow-up. We are going to be reading some of these. And if you want, please send us your opinions. Give us permission to say your name or we won't read it. But we'll definitely either email us squashradio@gmail.com. That's squashradio@gmail.com. Or we're on any of the social media platforms. You may even get Bill to engage in a conversation. He's on Twitter.
@BuckSquash.
Well, and also occasionally guest starring on Squash Radio.
Occasionally guest on Squash Radio.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Bill.
Thanks, Connor. Fun as always. I look forward to the next episode, and we will see you next time.